this is why we're asking this question, because there's some layers here that, you know, we want to make sure the committee's sensitive to.
Well, to the issue of complaints, you're going to get complaints until discards are assigned on a boat-by-boat basis. That's the way it is. On, right. And we can make everybody 100% broke, too. On the issue of five, I mean, I've wanted an assumed discard rate. I'll swap an assumed discard rate in a heartbeat for having to pay for observers, because I can't afford them. So I'd rather have a higher assumed discard rate than have to pay for observers. So if the criteria is I got to have five to get the real discard rate or the real phony discard rate, as opposed to the assumed phony discard rate, I'll take the assumed one. I'd rather have less strata and live with a higher number that I don't have to pay for.
And so, Dave, are you suggesting that burden be shifted to the boats with more discards, so that those folks that are fishing cleanly, you're willing to have a higher assumed discard rate? Just for my clarification.
Yeah, I would rather have a higher discard rate. I mean, I think David Pierce has raised a legitimate question. You know, if there are people discarding high amounts of fish, we need to know more about why that's occurring. And a way to do that is with more coverage.
Tom?
So the, PDT's talked about this, so I got questions for everything. I think you got to realize that in some cases, the discards of large amount of fish are not due to higher discard rates. Oftentimes, with some stocks anyway, the categories of vessels that are discarding more fish often have lower discard rates, but they're generating more discards because their KAL is higher, their total quantity of fishing activity is higher. So in some sense, in some avenues, some people I'm sure will interpret this as saying, well, I've got a very low discard rate, and yet I'm getting punished with higher levels of observer coverage. I mean, these are the issues that come up when you try and talk about reallocating this stuff this way.
Let's use a real example. Let's say I'm a gillnetter using 8-inch mesh, and I only land 300 pounds of fish today, but because of seal damage, I discard 100 pounds of fish that the seals ate half the fish. Now, I have a very high discard rate. I also have a very low landing rate, but I think it's still important to know why you had 100 pounds of discarded fish. And I think, you know, once some of that stuff gets exposed, perhaps the council will start, you know, dealing with some of these ancillary issues that are creating these high discard rates and, you know, things such as seal predation. We're wasting an awful lot of fish feeding a hungry crop of seals that only like to eat the liver and the guts out of the fish but render the fish unmarketable. Well, maybe we ought to start dealing with some of these issues, but to deal with them, we have to know about them and be able to document them.
Have you got enough guidance, Tom? Is there anything? Tom, PK, you haven't had a chance all day.
Yeah, just because we skipped over the bullet points. Tom, can you go over what you mean in the second bullet point on the second half? What do you mean by that? And if it's... Yeah.
So I think I can. Potentially you can say that there's two different reasons for why we want to have observer coverage on sectors or any catch monitoring on sectors. And one idea is that you want to make sure you know what a sector caught to make sure he didn't go over his ace. That's one reason. So, you know, you might want it, if you've got a sector, and we do have some with some stocks, for example, where they catch maybe a fraction of their total ace. you know, say 40 or 50% of their total lace. Well, if you think about that, I mean, they'd have to be discarding an equivalent amount to exceed their ace, which is probably unlikely. Why would they do that? You know, they're throwing money away. So you might say, okay, if I know the precision of my estimate on discards on that, geez, you know, the guy might have caught 60%. Well, you know, all you might say you need is, I want to know enough precision to know that his 50% really isn't 100%. That might not take very much observer coverage. The slightly different question, and this in some respects, this is kind of an assessment question. You know, that necessarily may not be the level of precision we want for the assessment. We may want to know that under the assessment, we may say, well, we want to know that he caught 50 or 52%, whatever that number works out to be. We don't just want to know that he caught less than 100. We want to know that he caught 52%. That might take a higher level of observer coverage. And, you know, we've got two different programs going on, don't forget. We've got the NIFOP program and we've got the ASM program. And so, you know, an argument can be made that NIFOP and the SBRM is trying to address the issue of enough accuracy to make sure that the assessment performs well. Now, we can argue whether the standard is actually working to meet that, but you could say that, well, that accomplishes that. And then the ASM is another level of coverage which is trying to make sure that they don't exceed their sector ace. Well, if that's the case, you know, how you evaluate where your level of observer coverage may change based on how close a sector is to achieving its ace. It may not. You may decide, hey, I want them both. I want it to be precise. And if we do it right, then we answer both questions.
Yeah, just to follow up. I mean, because I kind of have a problem with the second half of that bullet point to using the catch estimates to see if, you know, the catch to see if the estimates are precise on the stock itself. That's what you mean, correct? I mean, if the ace, if only so much is taken out of the ace and there's so much left, then you're saying that maybe the catch predictions or assessments could have been off of that stock, correct? Is that what you?
Well, I think my choice of terms is wrong. I guess when I use the, you know, a lot of times we just say catch. The reality is we don't know what catch is ever. We have a catch estimate, no matter how we do it. So I'm not sure I should have included the word estimate in that bullet.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my short answer is both. I think we want accurate, precise catch information for both assessment purposes and for the purposes of ensuring compliance at the sector and individual level. So I think we've identified monitoring objectives, among them improved documentation of catch, reduced cost, incentivize reducing discards. I think, you know, under our goal one within this framework, I think we've done, you know, we've spelled out what we want out of a monitoring program in terms of improved catch information. Several things rely on that improved catch information, but I don't think we need necessarily to make this choice. With that said, and getting back to an earlier example that you cited in terms of extra large mesh gill net trips, specifically with monks, has there been any discussion for at the PDT level of something other than a sort of gear strata approach? You know, for instance, we have dogfish vessels in Chatham that have been covered 18 of their last 19 trips, and they get in by 9:30 in the morning. They don't catch any ground fish, and yet they set hooks that other people set in other places to attempt to catch ground fish. So there's no gear strata there, but perhaps the PDT could discuss a pre-trip self-identification or a designation that the captain could make that could then later be checked against VTR and dealer reports to make sure that when somebody says, I'm going out on a dogfish trip, and receives less coverage because that trip designation tends not to interact with any ground fish, that they actually went on that trip. And we do a little spot check audit on the back end and say, yep, you landed 3,000 pounds of dogfish. You were in at 9, just like yesterday, just like tomorrow. I think that would be really helpful, but it's not going to be possible through a simply identifying a new gear strata. Has the PDT discussed anything other than a different approach to, say, extra large mesh gill nets?
No. No, we haven't. So part of the problem with that is then you would have to stratify those boats differently. If it's not an impossibility, I don't think, but if you create a category of trips that are subject to a different level of observer coverage, you suspect would have to stratify those trips differently to avoid, to have the accurate discard estimate for that category of gear. So you would wind up creating more strata. The other thing that would happen is that when you do that, because you're taking those low ground fish catch trips out of that gear strata, then, you know, just recognize that the discard rate for the other boats would go up.
And the discard rates for the other boats will go up because they're discarding more fish. I mean, I recognize the, you know, the averaging impact of putting observers on boats, quote-unquote ground fish boats, certainly sector boats that are going out and operating in ways that they're not interacting with ground fish. But I do think we should be pursuing some strata that's refined past the level of gear, whether that requires a captain's designation or a change to the hail system, and on the backside, a double check to ensure that their dealer report or their VTR jives with what they said they were about to do. I think that's something that we should be able to look at. I just don't see any point in the level of coverage we've seen on these dogfish trips, but we have no mechanism to identify, hey, I'm going out over the bar to catch dogs, I'll be right back. We have no way to let the observers know what the intention there is.
Thanks, Tom. Further guidance to the PDT. All right. Have you got anything else, Tom? Is there any other business to come before the committee? Sir.
And my name is Jerry Sigler. I'm from East West Tech in Colorado, representing the observer providers. We had a huge problem with the cancellations in the sectors. That problem is causing observers to depart from a program. And present program is ending now. The government is proposing to pay and cut sea day for observers to the levels of a three-quarter, half, or one-quarter of the sea day. This will put observer pay to the limits they cannot survive. So we may have no observers. This is very simple. And if the council will not address the cancellation problem, this is a tremendous problem for providers and observers. If the observer cannot make any money, support, pay the rent, he's looking for another job. The agency is manipulating coverage. The coverage is too high. Let's lower the coverage. 1 month, we don't have any boats to observers. Two selected boats for entire group of observers. How to survive? Then the boats they can cancel for any reason. Can we retrieve that time? No. Once the observer is assigned to the boat, stays with the boat. The time is lost. So how the observers, they can survive? How they can go to the next year when even of those cancellations, they will not have a one sea day. They will have a quarter of the sea day because there is a proposal to have up to 6 hours. And on the top of it, I hear a lot about How expensive is observer coverage? Do industry wants to have really observers, really professional people with the sea legs and with a mind understanding of the fishery? Yes, they do. It's a pleasure to work with the guys who is not seasick, not puking around, and is knowing what he's doing, what kind of a fish and what's going on. Of course, but it costs money. Those people are educated people. They will not work for $75 a day. If we will cut, let's say the observers is making $300 a day for a sea day. And with the problem of cancellations, everything, the observer is not working 15 days. Absolutely not. Good, dedicated observer can make maybe 8 days a month. This equals $2,400. If this will be a quarter of a pay for observer with a new system, half a day, this will be even lower. This is not a lot of money for that work. This is something the council will have to plan. If the planning really good future, good reliable information from observers, Tom is calling for a high resolution, everyone else is calling for a good reliable data and information, we have to be concerned about the observers. We have to be. Because we cannot just take, the agency is asking to provide the best possible people. We're screening the resumes, we're trying to find out the best people. It's not as many. This will be impossible. So there is another distress around the corner. It's really, I hear from observers a lot of different stories, but already the observers, in the numbers, they quit the program. It just will be even worse. So, please, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Ron Borgeson, commercial fisherman. Could you tell me how many sectors did actually go over their ACE?
Well, I'm not sure we've got the. I don't have the numbers for fishing year 2011. Melissa, can you answer that? I don't think any of them did in fishing year 2010.
Sue or Melissa?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have the numbers right in front of us, but I don't believe anybody has gone over it. There was one stock, I think, that went over, but I think that the carryover, or was it transfer? The bottom line is nobody went over their final ACES.
Well, it seems to me that there's an awful lot of concern about the observer coverage when none of the sectors have gone over on their ACE. And I'd like to say that I think the best observer coverage you can ask for is from the fishermen themselves. That's where you're going to get the best and most accurate information, providing that something happens in return for us. Because if we have to pay for the observers next year, there will be no fishermen and there will be no information. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, other business. We will be next Thursday discussing in a preliminary way 2013 management priorities, and then in November, when we meet in Newport, we will be approving the final priorities. I suggest, Mr. Chairman, that this committee needs to schedule, at least for our next agenda, although we may get some marching orders from the council when it meets next week, but at a minimum, we need to schedule for our next agenda some attention to be paid to Amendment 18, Consolidation Excessive Shares. We're about to enter a new regime, tremendous restriction on the ground fish fishery because of the low ACLs. And we are, of course, now formally experiencing a fishery failure. And I suggest that means that the time is now ripe for us to take that amendment off of the back burner and bring it forward and in a very aggressive way deal with these important concerns. Otherwise, it will all unfold before our eyes, and we may as well take Amendment 18 and put it in a bottle and send it off into New Bedford Harbor, because it will be of no use to us. The time is now ripe, so that's my suggestion, that entertain this particular very important issue at our next committee meeting. I recognize there are a lot of things to discuss, but this is really of high priority. I'll be making this pitch at the council meeting next week. I think many people in the industry will do the same thing. So I offer that up as food for thought and a needed direction.
We'll be on next week's list. Dave.
Yeah, I want to return to the gentleman's comments about the Observer program, and somebody needs to refresh my memory as to, we require a college degree for the NEFOPS program. Do we require it for the ATSI monitors? No. I mean, the reason I say this is we have a lot of people that work at the co-op that can identify every fish on the planet, and they work for about $10 an hour. And to get paid for a quarter of a day and get $75, they'd be really happy to do that job. You know, my crewman a lot of times, whiting fishing here, isn't making $75 a day. And he's working his butt off. So I am sympathetic to the fact that they're having problems finding people to work, but with the amount of people that are unemployed in this country at the moment, I can't believe that these jobs are, if they're advertised enough, that there aren't people that aren't going to take them. So I just wanted to, say that on the record. I support a quarter day's pay for a quarter day work. I don't think you should be paid for 24 hours to work six. And I'm sorry if that means that a lot of qualified observers are leaving, but that's the way I personally believe very strongly.
Come on back.
Presently, agency required college education proven to get the ASM position. That was not for a future. It was considered that it's maybe a high school education. It was originated from the MRAG Americas program in Hawaii, where it was deficiency of educated people. I don't think consul or anyone else will rely on the data collected by the co-op workers or endangered species, which is a very important part. That information cannot be collected, verified by non-biologists without education. So I kind of disagree. I'm sorry. This is important and will be to council to determine if people with a high school or no education, there is another variation of the hiring observers. There is a scrutiny of the records and criminal and all their stuff. There's not a simple process to become observer. And someone from co-op or somewhere else not will fit the job description. It's maybe a, but this will be a, this will jeopardize the quality of data and information. And it would be significant. So this is important to have educated people. And I'm not saying that necessarily the fishermen have to pay for observers. Someone have to pay. If this have to be a successful and good program for everybody, the information collected by observers have to be reliable, good information. This someone can say, yes, I agree. Because if you will start sending people from a street which they know fish, but they don't know any other things, that will be a problem. There will be a bigger problem. So that's one of the things I want to mention to you. When I worked in Alaska in 1988, a lot of companies, they start implementing the C-day rate, daily guarantees. Okay, they try to attract valuable people, officers on the factory ships to make sure that they will stay. They will stay with the program. They will stay with the company, with the boat. Because sometimes even fishing in Alaska was not as great. Okay, we had days when it was not much fish. We had a trip, broken trips, where it was no money, no shares. And the companies in Alaska, they decide, yes, everyone's going to get the guarantees. So this is something which is a minimum. Other industries which are sea-related, merchant marines, other industries, they do have a sea day. They do have a sea day, doesn't matter what. Observer is not taking the money from a catch, from an amount of fish is caught and put up to the hold. Doesn't matter how much the observer work, how much time he spend digging to the discards or anything else, he is paid the same amount, the same sea day. So this is a, the council have to decide in the future how to do that, those, that type of decisions. But NMFS will not support to have uneducated people doing the marine mammal and other sophisticated sampling or judgments for a bycatch and other things. Thank you. Laura.
Much as I would like this meeting to be adjourned, I just would like to comment, and I hear what you're saying, but there's a huge difference between a 150-foot fractory trawler in Alaska. And I think the whole issue with the observer coverage is that the economic reality of the value of New England groundfish in the market does not sustain that. There's not enough in 90 cents. There's not enough in 45 cents for redfish or 90 cents for a yellowtail or even the $3.50 to $4.50 we've been paying for codfish this summer to employ the livelihoods of a crew, a captain, and an observer, especially at a rate that is so far out of the job market within the fishing industry. And it's not to say that any of those observers aren't doing a good job and that they're not experts. It's just the economic reality of the value of the catch versus the costs that are being assigned it before we even start about talking about fuel and fees for unloading and all the rest of it. We have a finite cost structure. We are competing in a global marketplace, and that's the issue with the cost of observers, that we're dealing with a protein here. And it's not, there's not an unlimited price point that we can use to cover all of these expenses. And so I'm sympathetic absolutely to your plight, but if you look hard at the economics, I think it's hard to layer that on top of the costs that this industry is already facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. I mean, there's really no question that next year is going to be a very tough year for every component of the industry. Ron, then Rich, and then we're going to wrap this up. Some of us have to go to Warwick.
I think the bottom line that's being brought out is that there's a major problem with the observer program. And I don't, I mean, I'm over there a lot and working very closely with them. But if you have untrained personnel, if you can't pay them enough, and I pay the people that go out on my trips $400 a day because I need good people. And I think one thing you could look at is how long are they retaining observers? And if you have a high turnover rate, you get bad data. And I'll give you one example where experience, I was looking at length frequencies that they were listed as yellowtail. And there's length frequencies, 60 through 63 centimeters, you know, 54 centimeters, 72. So this is not yellowtail. Okay, I mean, it was like that. That went through the editing process. That went from an observer, an auditor, an editor. I mean, that's what happens when you don't have trained people. So there's a problem on the data side. There's a host of other issues. And the observers are, if you see one of the full-time observers, I mean, the paperwork they come off that boat with is like that. So there's a backlog. 2 months later, the editor is calling up the observer with questions. That observer doesn't remember that trip anymore. It was 2 months ago. You know, was this centimeters? Was this pounds? Was this kilos? This is, and the program gets further behind. So there are a lot of issues. Now, I would suggest that somebody needs to come in from the outside and take a look at the overall process to figure out what is wrong here, because these are all very important issues. We don't have enough money, you know, on a groundfish trip to pay for an observer. I mean, on trip boats, you would need two observers if you talk in terms of, you know, higher levels of coverage. Are there other things that could be done? I personally, we're heading in the scallop fleet. I think it'll be self-reporting, electronic self-reporting, once we, you know, show that, in fact, we could provide accurate information. That will be the path that we probably have to proceed down.
Rich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm honored again to be the last speaker. I think the last time I was in this room, I was the last speaker, and I gave grace, right, David? You remember? Yeah. But anyway, I'm just looking at this, and we're having a hard time with fishermen, getting qualified fishermen to go out fishing because they went to other jobs, or they're just not fishing anymore because it's just not happening for them. And on the other end, this fellow in the back saying they're not getting the observers. The system is totally broken. It's broken, and we're stuck in the middle with what you people want to give us, or what the NIMS wants to give us, or NOAA. And it's just not going to work. I'm for full retention. We wouldn't have to talk about discarding species if it was 100% retention. And if you're talking about 100% observer coverage, someone mentioned earlier, I think it was Mia Bullard, that there's only 400 vessels. I think it can be done. The budget that goes into this fishery, we can have 100% coverage on these vessels. But to leave you with my thoughts of the economy is something bad just happened, is the QE3. We're just printing more money and more money. The price of fuel is almost $4 a gallon for these vessels. What's going on in the Middle East, we can expect $6 to $8 a gallon. And I'm not far off of what could happen. We've never been into a global economy. We've never been into a global collapse. We had the Depression in the 30s, and that's probably nothing compared to what's going to happen. You know, people talking about scallops going to Europe. Europe's collapsing also. But just be aware that we're going to have big problems in the next few months just by the crash of the global economy. Our dollar isn't worth beans anymore. And by them printing more money, it's still not going to make anything. So what we're discussing here might not mean anything because no one will be able to go to work, including yourself. But it's just a shame to see it this way, and again, I left it the last meeting this way. God bless you all. Thanks.
On that cheery note, this meeting is adjourned.